Welcome to Eclectic, the podcast about anything and everything youth ministry, you name it. I'm Rob Brower.
I'm Scott Davis.
How you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Splendid.
You know what I had for lunch earlier today?
What did you have for lunch earlier today?
The same thing you had.
What?
Wasn't it delicious?
You had a little Tom?
I had a little Tom, but I added bacon. Did you add bacon to yours?
I added bacon. Instead of fries, I had tater tots.
I had the tater tots too.
Are you kidding me?
I put goop on my burger though.
I had goop on my burger.
No way.
But I didn't have pickles.
You didn't. I did have the pickles.
Oh, see, we're so different.
So I don't even know I did. And the other thing that I did is that was their daily special, but it normally comes with a 21 ounce soda. I don't drink soda, so I upgraded to a small milkshake instead.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
We are so the same. It's
exactly.
It's like looking in a mirror.
It is.
Wow. Finish this sentence, okay?
Okay.
Sometimes when I'm alone, I like to
eat.
Wow, that's what I was thinking.
That is so cool.
Man, wow.
Wow.
That's just
amazing.
It is amazing.
It really is. All right. Well, hey, so Rob, last week we were talking about, we continued our conversation about young adult ministry, millennial ministry, ministering to millennials.
Yes.
And we agreed previously that it's important. We're not doing it well, but we got to dig in and figure this thing out.
And by we mean we as the church as a whole.
Yes.
Not just your church, your local church, my local church.
Yes.
Or just our denomination.
As
but,
a whole,
you know,
we don't do it well. There are some ministries that do it really well. And,
yes.
And the hard thing is those ministries tend to draw so many that it makes it hard for us to, you know, we may have some millennials in our own context that then are drawn to the ones that are already up and going really well that make it really hard for us to feel like
we
can start something.
For a while, the fad was that millennials would leave the church and gather together and start their own millennial church. Millennial-led, millennial-driven, millennial-attended.
How do you feel about that?
You know, there's a part of me that feels like, look, if we can create a venue in which people can come together and hear the gospel preach and that they can get on board and they can go and make disciples to do more of the same, fine, let's do it. However, some of these churches were finding that millennials don't have deep pockets, and if you're going to run a church, it does take some cash flow. So people have to tithe, and then you've got some millennials who kind of feel like, well, I don't know why I should. You tell me why I should give you all my hard-earned money, you know? And so it kind of creates issues. I don't know the exact statistics, but there was a large percentage of millennial churches that folded.
Oh, that was like 98%.
That's high.
Oh.
No, I mean, I don't know if that's
I totally made it up.
Yeah, it could be 98.2%. I don't know.
But I agree with you, and I think that's a key difficulty. I've not really ever been a big fan of any massive movement like that focuses on one particular generational segment. I think we are better when we figure out how to worship together. Multi-generations together in one place. There is great wisdom and experience on the older end of things, and there's energy and vitality on another end of it. And a whole lot of stuff in the middle that when it all comes together, it makes a holistic, healthy thing. And I think when we focus so much on just one, we lose some of the health of all of the others. But it does not negate the fact that we need to minister to them.
We do.
So no matter what context we're in, whether it's a small church or a mega church, we've got to begin to ask the question, where do we begin? Where do we need to start, and where do we need to go? And I think what we really have to do is look at our context and look at what the needs are there for millennials. And maybe what are some of the opportunities that are there that maybe we haven't noticed before because we've had a tendency to just kind of ignore it, like we talked about last time.
Well, I mean, if we're going to do that, I would say with anything, Scott, the reason anybody would be listening to this podcast at all is if they're in youth ministry and they're asking those questions, where do we go to get information? They're going to look to people that have gone there, done that,
right,
succeeded or failed, and take their advice or heed their warnings, right?
Right.
And so our hope is that if we've done something in youth ministry that we've been successful in, they would follow our lead and tweak it however they need to make it work for their particular context. I don't think it's any different for millennial ministry. And so the question would be, well, who do we look to that has been successful
mm-hmm.
in integrating millennials into their church?
Right.
And off the top of your head, how many churches can you think of?
Oh, a small percentage.
A very small percentage.
Yeah.
And of those churches, how many of their senior pastors have you had conversation with recently?
Zero.
Okay. Up until this week, the answer would have been zero for me.
Yeah.
But I told you that Monday and Tuesday we had a conference, State of Youth Ministry in the Northwest, and Monday right. night's focus was specifically on young adults ministry, and then all day Tuesday it was just kind of youth ministry in general. The guest speaker was Pastor Rick Dunn, and he's the lead pastor of Fellowship Evangelical Free Church in Knoxville, Tennessee. So he had a little bit of an accent. You know, really nice guy, just loved his heart for millennials. But, you know, he comes in and he's like, yeah, you know, this is what I do. We got a lot of millennials at our church. And I'm like doing the accent. I don't mean to be offensive. I'm sorry. but he says, you know, I co-authored this book, Shaping the Journey of Emerging Adults. He wrote it back in 2012, University Press. You can go check it out. I know you can get it on Amazon. I bought it on Kindle. And I was like, I'm going to be honest, like, I'm like, yeah, I'm not that impressed. I've met people who have authored books. I've met people who pastor good-sized churches. Until he told me this. On their main campus, it's a church of 5,000 plus. Okay?
Okay.
That didn't impress me, just the number alone. But this is what impressed me. 65% of that congregation is age 35 or under.
Wow.
65%. That blew my mind.
Right.
We're living in a day where most churches across America are going, how do we engage people between the ages of 18 and 35?
You know what? And a lot of people might look at that number and think, wow, it's so overrun by 35 and under. But we're not talking about it's 65% people in their 30s.
No.
It's 65% people 35 and under. And when you think of that, 65% for that... That's pretty well balanced because that leaves 35% to be older.
Yes.
So there's still a good representation yes. of generations.
There is.
But it's very healthy right there in the middle.
Yeah.
People in their 30s with kids.
Exactly. So if you're 35 and married and you have two kids, when I was 35, that was my statistic. I had two kids. That would have added four to that,
right,
you know, 65%.
So it's a lot more balanced than somebody might think.
It is. But it's higher on the whole when you look at just that millennial population
right.
of 18 to 35 or 18 to mid late 20s, but the young adult population of 18 to 35 that we kind of predefined. And so Christianity Today did an interview article with him. Paul Pastor interviewed him. And it was actually kind of interesting. One of the first questions that he jumps in asking is, you know, that millennials have been skewered in the media. And he asked him, why are you so excited about working with them? And his response was great. He said, with is the important word here. To be effective with emerging adults, and he calls them emerging adults, not millennials or young adults. But to be effective with emerging adults, pastors need to think of ministry as work with, not work at or work for. And then he goes on to say that this generation is deeply drawn to places of passion and authenticity. They mm-hmm. want to be part of something that's meaningful, that is more than what they experience in other places.
You know, and that fits a lot of stuff that I've come across recently about kind of the hipster church movement,
mm-hmm.
that fewer and fewer are finding that fulfilling and meaningful, that fewer are looking for that when they're trying to find a church. They're looking, you know, they don't care if the guy is older and dresses his age. It's the authenticity, it's the realness.
Yeah. Plus,
relevance has gone down.
Yeah.
And authenticity has skyrocketed.
And it may have something to do with skinny jeans because they're kind of hard to put on.
Especially if
you're not skinny. Yeah. So, but that's another podcast. and so when it comes to the ministry with millennials, he was asked another question. He said, how is it that the church gets millennial ministry so wrong? And I thought what he had to say was so relevant. He says, too often the church treats emerging adults the way that overindulgent Americans treat their kids. We try to show our love by giving them things and doing things for them and making sure that they have everything they could possibly want. And I want to stress this point right there. We think we need young adults in our church. We have to attract them, which mm-hmm. I think is very common. But he says this is wrong. Recognizing that you don't have that segment in your church is important to understand right. your church.
Yeah.
But to go the step of, okay, now we need to go and do what we can to attract them is wrong. He says, we don't have to attract them. We have to care about them. Sincerely, from the bottom of our heart, we have to care about them. We have to believe in them. And we have to communicate a vision and mission for their lives that, in fact, includes them.
Yeah.
They have to be a part of that mission, not from the outside looking in.
Yeah. So this is a massive change in mindset. Because what I'm hearing in that mm-hmm. is that we need to focus less on what programming we can create to bring them in and more on simply relating to them. Move away from an attractional perspective with programming mm-hmm. and wowing them with things that we think that our perceptions of millennials, you know, of what yeah. is attractive to them would be, and move into the realm of relational engagement.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was interesting, as we were talking with him, he was sharing a lot of stories. He said, you know, he doesn't preach every weekend. They've got teaching pastors, and he talks a lot about giving his ministry away. And I know we've heard that before. He didn't invent that concept, but he has given away like 80% of his ministry. He doesn't preach, but like, you know, one every 5 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the people going up giving the message are millennials. And he said he was preaching a few weeks ago, and he said, man, he turned back and realized that worship was just led by a 24-year-old and two 18-year-olds. And I think, how many of us in our church could say that? How many of us could say that we have a church staff and a church culture that would entrust the leading of the entire congregation in an act of worship before our holy God to a 24-year-old and a couple of 18-year-olds, no matter how musically gifted they are?
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is. I mean, as he started saying that stuff, I realized, you know what? I'm guilty of that too, because I've got millennials that are, they're not youth leaders, they're Y-lets. Youth leaders in training. We created a whole segment and said, you know what, you're 23, you're not quite good enough to be a youth leader, so we're going to slap a pre-label on you.
Yeah. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, and I realized, what am I doing?
The era of the pre's.
What am I doing? They're not in youth ministry. Yeah. They're an adult who has a heart for youth. So what do
Why
I do?
Why are you not engaging them in that?
I need to train them and release them.
Yeah. And you know, we have multiple worship teams, and they rotate on a 3-week basis.
Yeah.
But within each team, there's different youthful representation. You know, we have a drummer and a bass player that are in the youth group that are teenagers on one team. In fact, that drummer has been playing drums for that worship team on, you know, Saturday nights and Sunday mornings since he was, I think he started when he was sixth grade. Now they are by frustrate, I mean, you know, that comes from a very jealous place. They are frustratingly musically talented family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are a couple of key teenagers that are, sing vocals with the worship, but we don't have that level of youth that actually leads. You know, they're mm-hmm. participating in, but they're not leading.
Yeah.
We have to find ways to make room for that.
Yeah.
It and not everybody can be in the leadership role. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like we should fire some of our existing worship leaders and
we probably should.
Yeah, maybe. and then fill everything with a millennial, because we then don't want to trash the existing generations. But we have to find ways to make room for the ability for these millennials to step in and be
the
used.
The desire for that change has to come from the inside out. I don't want to mention any names, but
making up names.
Sorry. Okay, good. Maybe there is a church named Tim.
The Church of the Tim.
The Church.
Tim Church.
The Tennessee.
Inter. National
Missionary Church.
There we go.
We apologize.
I really hope there isn't one.
To the Tennessee International Missionary Church, if we've just offended you, we take it all back.
All of it.
Except the apology.
We love Tim.
We do love Tim. Tim is awesome.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's move on.
And so I don't know what I was going to say. Oh, I do. So there was this church. Not Tim.
Not mentioning names.
But I'm not mentioning the name of the church, but a church that I know very well, and I know the people there, and I love the people there dearly, right? And my wife and I used to attend the church. And then they got a worship pastor, young, hip guy, right? One of the first things he did is he kind of wiped the slate of worship volunteers. And some very good friends of ours who are very gifted and I believe called by God to worship ministry were kind of released as volunteers. And he filled the stage with millennials that had a certain look. So everybody looked young, dressed young, acted young, and had a certain amount of musical talent. And they played his music from his CD that he released.
Oh, wow.
And he pretty much did everything but just plug his CD at the end of every worship. You know, said, hey, thank you very much. Buy my CD out in the foyer. I mean, if he would have said that, I wouldn't have been surprised. But you know what happened is he alienated the entire population segment of that church that was 35 and older.
Yeah.
And eventually, people started leaving the church, and the church had to say, you know what? You're talented, but we've got to go a different direction.
Yeah, we can't sacrifice the rest of the church to placate to the millennial generation, to the millennials that we're trying to engage in ministry. But we have to figure out ways to make room for them. There's a fantastic book by Christine Pohl, P-O-H-L, and it's called Making Room. And it's kind of talking about, it's a very deep look at kind of rethinking hospitality in the church. And I think it's a fantastic book. Go read it. It's so much bigger than what we're talking about right here. But there's a piece of it, this idea of that we have to find ways to make room for more people in our lives. We have to find room to make room for more millennials to find and discover. Because there's a lot of them out there that would do something if they had the opportunity even to figure out what they're good at, but we don't engage them. And the way you find out what they're good at and how to engage them in ministry in the church is by engaging them relationally and being personable with them and discovering who they are as a person and then helping them begin to see maybe what they're good at.
Oh, absolutely.
Or give them things to do that they might fail in, but then they begin to discover what maybe they should be doing.
I think part of the problem is a lot of churches aren't really clear on what their objective is, what their mission is. It's just kind of this muddy, well, we're here to be the church. Well, what does that look like? And so one of the things that Rick says is he was very clear that we're about two things. We're about advancing the gospel and we're about making disciples.
Yeah.
And he went so far as to tell his board, which I thought was pretty bold, either fire me or get on board. And half the board quit. He didn't get fired. He said there was one lone voice of support on his board. But they said, you know what? I think God might have a plan for him here. And so they kept him, right? But he said that, listen, you can't expect overnight change. It's got to be a long game because he says in his context, it took him 5 years to tear down walls. He says he came into one of the fastest growing churches in America, and within 4 years, he made it one of the fastest declining churches, and that's when the board was unhappy, and they were talking about, hey, let's get rid of him. But they decided to keep him. A bunch of people left the church, and then under his leadership and vision, that very strong vision, they started growing. And now they're 5,000 plus on that main campus. Now they've got satellite campuses too. That are smaller, but on that main campus, 5,000 plus, 65% of them are age 35 or under. Yeah. And I think it has to start with that shift, that change in the way you think about millennials.
Yeah.
We have to begin to see millennials as God's people.
Yeah.
We have to see them as capable individuals and see their strengths and train them up.
Yeah. Now, so, I mean, the people who are going to be listening to this podcast are going to be the people who are youth pastors or youth workers or passionate about youth ministry or parents of teenagers or whatever. So the question to throw out then is that I'll ask you is, what can we from a youth ministry perspective begin to do in that direction?
I would say do a little bit of soul searching. Think about the things that you would not let a millennial do that's in your ministry, right? So as you're thinking about your night, your program, and you're like, okay, well, we've got the welcome and the intro, and yeah, I'll let the millennial do that. And then we've got a teaching on, you know, whatever. You know, I'm going to have my experienced leader do that, or I'm going to do that myself, and leading worship, et cetera, et cetera. We tend to give the more menial tasks. Hey, we'll let them lead games. We'll let her run sound, or, you know, something like that. But what's the worst thing that could happen if under your coaching and supervision, you let that 20-something-year-old teach middle school, teach the lesson? What's the worst thing that could happen?
Kids would fall asleep.
Kids fall asleep. But they fall asleep when adults preach.
Yep.
And they're right there, and I did that on purpose. They're right there as part of the problem. We go, adults, millennials. Well, millennials are adults, and we have to recognize that first of all.
Yeah, Rob, you really blew it there.
I did. Oh. I did, right? But that demonstrates part of our mindset. Yeah. We go, well, someday when you're older, kid.
Yeah, it's that church of tomorrow mindset.
Absolutely.
As opposed to, no, you're a part of it now. You know, I actually just met with one of our teenagers who's to talk about, listen, this is how you begin to sit down and look at forming a sermon, because mm-hmm. he's in a couple of weeks going to preach to the middle schoolers. He's
okay.
one of my high schoolers.
He should go to Main Event and enter into the preaching category.
Actually is.
Well, you know, I think that's great, Scott. I think that I'm not saying we have the answers. We don't have the answers. But I think even in the conversation that we've been having around this topic, my heart has been changing. God's been starting to change. And, you know, one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to get rid of our youth leader and training program. And what I'm going to move us toward is letting all the current youth leaders know that, hey, listen, the veteran youth leaders, we're building up these younger youth leaders, and so we're going to give them more responsibility, but we're not just going to throw them in the water in the deep end and hope that they survive. We're going to walk alongside them, and we're going to partner with them, and we're going to make them a part of this kingdom-growing adventure that we're on, right?
Yeah, when we planted our church a number of years back, our worship leader, to start all off, our worship leader had just graduated from high school in June.
Yeah.
And she couldn't play the keyboard and sing at the same time. So she'd play some chords and then sing and play some chords and then sing. And she was our worship leader, 18-year-old girl. And as we moved forward and we planted the church and we're growing, and it wasn't too long before she was playing and singing at the same time and doing both beautifully. And then she managed to pull in a worship band of a bunch of other 18 to 20-year-olds, and they were our band. They were our worship band. And to this day, she, you know, then a friend of mine, mm-hmm. Who shall remain nameless, Ron Zimmer, stole her away to his church because he could actually pay her. So he paid her, and she moved and took the job, and she's a paid worship leader to this day.
Yeah.
But she was empowered to step up, and it's like she describes it in just kind of a thanking me, a thank you letter kind of thing. She described it as, I held a crown over her head,
mm-hmm.
So that she could grow into it. And I think that's I think that's what we have to do with not just millennials, but the teenagers that are sitting in front of us in our youth rooms. With all of them, we have to hold these crowns over their heads until they can grow into them. Where they fit, but just let them understand, you will get there. This crown, this is yours.
Yeah.
And you will grow there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, I would love to talk a little bit more in the article. He goes a little bit more in depth about kind of what changing our mindset and what pouring into and releasing these millennials could look like. And I'd love to come back and talk a little bit about that. What can our churches do? We've already started kind of down that road as, you know, here are some steps that we can take. I'd love to talk about that a little more next episode.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So in the meantime, if you'd like to reach out to us, please feel free to email us, podcast@eclectic.com. That's eclectic. You can visit our website, eclectic.com, eclectic. Hit us up on Twitter. We're @eclectic. And on Facebook, visit our page. We're facebook.com/IamEclectic. I am actually Rob.
And I am figuratively Scott.
Ooh. Literally, you are figuratively.
Literally.
Literally?
Figuratively.
Literally, thank you for listening.
Stay eclectic.